that has big time camp. What the movie will be the ultimate champ. You might be finger crazy, my finger diseased, but do you watch another chance to find the best of this?
We rate each movie in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality.
It's Stan, Gene, Jack and Nick who watch it till it's finished, because the love for this movie can be diminished. And make the film's plot has no rhyme or reason, but that's a part of charm.
Colin Brad is off the season.
It's low budget film that is most true. They find a flick that monster boogaloo.
Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Yuck Mala. Welcome back, my friends, to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. This is Season 11, and this is Enter the Octagon. And I'm your host, 8th Dan Stanadu. And this movie, it influenced me so much, I've decided to overact everything. So, Jim Cotta, where are you?
I've decided to do all of my talking this week with the sound quality of a 1934 movie. So I'm happy to be here.
I told you to watch it on YouTube, not on Prime. For some reason, the YouTube was actually better.
It was really rough on Prime.
I tried to there, and I'm like, this is so bad. It's public domain. It has to be elsewhere. I'm so glad I did that.
Yeah, good call. I had to pick up. I had to turn on the subtitles. Yeah, the audio was that bad.
All right. Jack Hall!
I'm sure about turning on the subtitles helped you follow the story. No problem.
I clear up a lot of stuff. I did feel I was following way more once I did that.
By the way, yes, this is Jack Hall, and this Enter the Octagon means that everybody's has pitched a movie to represent a potential season, and the movie that scores highest gets to be the following season. And this is my pitch. This movie was budget boogaloo, meaning that the movie had to be done for $1 million or less, and that's adjusted for inflation. This movie, adjusted for inflation, is about $100,000, because even though it was only made for $7,500, it also came out in 1934.
All right, and finally, Nick Boxer.
Greetings and salutations. Stanadu, do you realize we've been 11 seasons and nobody's done a doo-doo joke at your expense? I find that amazing.
It is pretty amazing.
And Nick, I don't think we've done a Stanadooby-doo either.
No, I think...
And now we have to do it again.
Yeah. I don't even know where to go for that. See, Nick, you're really good this season for just inserting something that isn't germane at all to the episode. So congratulations for that.
Non-germane, that's where I live.
Yeah. All right, well.
My favorite Jackson brother, non-germane.
As we are going to talk about Maniac or Sex Maniac, whatever you want to call it, why don't you summarize it then, Nick?
Nick, I just want to say good luck.
This is really simple. Mad scientist discovers or is researching or has come up with some sort of cure-all for death. He then blackmails his lab assistant / comedian / impersonator.
I don't know where you got comedian from.
He played comedy clubs.
He's a vaudeville impersonator.
Yeah, he's a vaudeville.
Into procuring bodies and implying that he should go out and kill women so they could bring them back to life. However, before any of that really takes into huge effect, the lab assistant who it's implied that he's also is already mentally unstable, goes a little bit crazy and kills the doctor, and then starts impersonating the doctor, and he gets crazier and crazier, and his crimes get more and more horrific. And I believe this is the first educational film we've had in this in a in the Octagon.
Yeah.
Because there's cards that try to explain mania, I believe, throughout the film, and the portions of the film that follow the cards are so, supposed to emulate or dramatize the symptoms of mania. However, the cards are not really all that well researched, so none of this makes any sense whatsoever. I enjoyed this movie. I mean, it is the first movie I think I've ever seen made by the foundation of subtle acting.
I don't know why they didn't just go to the internet to verify all their information.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That would have been easier.
Yeah. And that's what happens.
Sort of.
There's that.
It's
There's
as,
that.
Good, it's as yeah. good a guess as anything. This movie is, what?
It's
like,
I don't know what to say about this movie, because it's either the most Boogaloo movie in history, or it's the first movie, so therefore it's hard to judge because it's the first.
Well, that's why I picked it, because it's really, in a lot of ways, considered the original Boogaloo movie. Like, this is, and you watch it, and it's true. It's laid the groundwork for almost everything Boogaloo that we've seen come since then. Like, it has everything. Every exploitation thing that you can imagine, it's fit into this, and it's like the first to do it in at least in a soundstage, but really the first to do it. You talk about the fact that there's it's educational, and they just threw those on, and they also the poster also it promotes it like that, because that's how you could get a movie which had nudity mm-hmm. into the theaters at the time, because this movie from 1934 has nudity, because like I say, it's an exploitation movie, and it sets the template for there's a reason why I can't even remember his name now. What's the name of what was the name again of the director?
Dwayne Esper.
He's called, his nickname is the grandfather of modern exploitation. And you can see it when you watch this. So yeah, it's like, I didn't think it was actually that good. Like, a lot of people are like, this is a movie you have to see. It's along a lot of lists of the best, the so bad it's good, and the best worst movies, and all this and that. I didn't actually think it was all that entertaining, but I can, in a place in history, I totally see what it is and can respect it for that.
Well, as any movie that from 1934, sometimes they're very hard to watch because of course they're still learning how to make movies and stuff like that, and I think that when you talk about it,
especially this guy, since he was a superintendent,
yeah,
I think for
yeah he really had a lot, he had a larger learning curve for sure, but you know, when you talk about the fact that it's 51 minutes, and I know that I was watching it and I was just like, oh, I must be like halfway through. I paused the movie and I'm like, oh, 15 minutes in. Wow. Okay, then fair enough. I got a lot more to go with this movie.
Narratively dense. That's what it is.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. It's batshit crazy, though. I'll give it that.
It is. Nothing makes any sense in relation to each other, and yet it's so clear. Like, his wife wrote the script. It's so clear that they think that this makes sense. Like, you're watching this. They think they got a tight script. They think they got themselves one tight script and realize. And meanwhile, you're like, there's so much stuff in this. And this movie comes in at 55 minutes. And you have to wonder, if they didn't have all the shots for no reason of, like, animals hopping around or mice scurrying around or, like, animals fighting for, like, no reason. They just, like, Every time there was one, it's like they decided to put it in there. Those
did not impact the running time because they were all superimposed over other shots.
The devil stuff being superimposed anytime he had a mania moment, that was amazing. But like,
I think was that a devil? I thought that was a monkey suit.
I think it was the devil. I think it was from it's from the 1922 Danish film Hexen. Hmm. I believe is where he took that footage.
Excellent. The thing for me is that, and I'm willing to bet that if you were able to sit down and talk to them, that they would be all impressed with the fact that they layered in subtext from Edgar Allan Poe. Because I'm watching it and I'm like, oh, so this is that part from that Poe story. This is that part from that Poe story. And it's just totally layered in on top. And yet, at the same time, they've managed to take all these elements which are really good in Edgar Allan Poe and make them really bad here, which is nonsensical, which is a skill in and of itself, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt you cannot judge this movie as trying to be Boogaloo. It's like some movies, it's like, okay, well, they're Boogaloo, but you know that was what they were aiming for. There was nothing to aim for at that point. The idea of a B-movie being so bad it's good, there's no idea of trying to create that, unlike some movies you see nowadays where that's clearly what they're going for and it's going to be entertaining. But this is a movie that turned out this way.
Oh yeah,
it's pure as it could be.
Yeah, it's impossible to, like, even breaking it down is like breaking it down into the component what the fuck parts, because again, just by existing, it's what the fuck.
It really is. It's so loaded with WTS, you can't even, yeah, like, you don't even, where do you go with it?
I gotta say, like, if I was ever asked the question, and surprisingly I haven't, what's the oldest film you've seen that has nipples in it? 1934 is nowhere near where I would have expected that answer.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
I was actually surprised when it showed up, and not just like a brief little you know nip slip kind of thing. No, there's like it's like full on at that like a couple of times.
Yeah,
it's like
wow. There's it happens more than once.
Yes,
and then there's that other scene where it's just the chicks in basically like the bra and panties for it's for no reason. It's not educational, though. That's how they're trying to present it. It's for no reason than just to that they're like, you know what dudes will like is chicks, hot chicks in almost no clothes.
And
you know, this is one of the first movies where guys were chubbing up in the theater and couldn't wait to get home. This is one of the first movies of all time.
The thing about it too is the fact that the scene that you're talking about with the women. I mean, it's what's his nuts. Don Maxwell's wife, who's in there, who was introduced 40 minutes into a 55 minute movie out of nowhere. It's just like, oh, yeah. she's living with her friends.
And she's not in the conclusion at all.
No, I mean, like, it's all tossed together at the end.
I love that scene with all the women in the bra and panties. You know, 1934 hot.
yeah, for sure.
Great grandmother.
What's that rubs your ass or whatever, and that she's all shaking
around. Oh yeah, for sure. Well, it's because it's supposed to help eliminate belly fat.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go ahead. What were you saying, James?
I love that the conversation they're having is about how men aren't manly anymore.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, men are all right. Wussy now in 1934.
Oh man.
I just love whenever like you watch something old like this or read a book for like the 1800s that just puts into perspective that like things always used to be better.
Oh, I know.
And it's the same now. It always used to be better.
This feels like a movie that to do this show properly, we had to at some point do, you know, like it's a gap if you don't talk about this film.
It's incredible. I mean, I have no words to truly describe this film amply.
It is what, like, we've shied away from some of the ones that are really well known, like Plan 9 and such like that, that are, they're almost too covered. Like,
yeah, they're low hanging fruit.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, I love that we were able to watch something that's this base core foundational is the word I want for B movies and for Boogaloo. That we hadn't seen before. None of us had seen this. We didn't, you know, Plan 9 I've seen 20 times. So
oh, yeah.
I can't come in fresh to it.
No.
One of us had seen this, but quite a while ago, Stan, you watched it, but not with a Boogaloo lens.
No, right? No, for sure. And I'm not even sure that I got it halfway through the movie, quite frankly. I may have only watched 20 minutes.
Without the Boogaloo lens, this is... Yeah, why would you watch this without a Boogaloo lens?
Well, because the second that you see the overacting and the yeah. ridiculous concept, it's just like yeah, I mean, other than the fact that it's super short and the fact that it's called Maniac, so it's like, okay, that, you know, you talk about words that are like, you know, cues for me, it's like Maniac? Hello?
Yeah, it's like me and Massacre. Yeah, right. Just gotta watch every movie that's got that in the name.
Well, yeah, actually, the first movie this season was Crash, and there's 413 movies called that. Now we've done Maniac, because a million movies done that, and it's like, yeah, that almost seems like this season's theme. Like, that's this season's movies that are repeated. Is we're not actually doing Enter the Octagon. What we're doing is this season's theme is movies that have too many damn titles of the same.
All right, I guess we're ready to move on.
I think so.
Well, we should go to scoring.
Here's the goal. I know this movie is crazy. The goal should really be to bring this episode in under the length of the movie.
yeah, we're under the gun on that one.
Yeah, I know.
And that's the thing, though, is that if this movie is like we're not often we sit there and we talk about things ahead of time. Like start describing WTF scenes, but it's so tough with this one. Instead we're just describing the movie's importance and this and that, because it's so, if we get into the WTFs, it's a quicksand. We'll be here for days.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, for sure. Because you have to break this movie down minute by minute, because it changes from 1 minute to the next minute.
All right. Well, let's go into it. In our search for the ultimate B-movie, we rate each film in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality. The first category is called Schlock Appeal, and we start with Stan.
Well, this is a struggle for me, because I was amazed by this movie, because I feel like there's so much schlock, it just oozes. And the fact that it's from 1934 means that it's even more incredible. The problem is, I want to give it a 10, but the problem is that it was hard to watch. So it's not enjoyable. There's a lot of schlock, but it's not necessarily enjoyable schlock. So I'm going to bump it down to and just give it an 8.
Actually, I'm starting out, I think, for schlock appeal, for the way this is marketed and how this traveled around the country. With a 10. However, I'm deducting one because for a lot of the audience, I think this was basically porn rather than schlock. Not a huge deduction. There is a similarity between schlock and porn in some sleazy way. And then here's where it gets a little complicated, because I'm also deducting 8 points because I didn't pick this movie. So we're going with a 1. No, seriously, 9. We're good on that.
Because you want yours to win. Yeah. No, this movie is, you're right. I mean, it went around, it was Maniac first. And when people weren't showing up, then they retitled it Sex Maniac. And that's when it became popular, proving that people were pervs even back in 1934. You're right. I mean, there was erotic movies, but this is not presented as an erotic movie. It's trying to be a movie, but just so exploitive that it does set the bar at a 10. But because I didn't enjoy it as much as I wanted to, I do think that you guys gave it the right score with your 8.5.
All right. So that's 8 for you. All right. Do I have to do the plus one for that and minus that one? I think nine is the correct number. It has a lot of outside of the stuff we've talked about. There's still a lot of like Jekyll and Hyde stuff and posing as someone else and you know, pretending you're a doctor is a weird thing to try to do for an extended period of time, for sure.
especially when you have no concept of what that means. Like,
pretending to be a doctor who's doing secret experiments, yeah. I think is extra.
But he's trying. It's a doctor that's trying to cure people who are crazy. So let's. Oh, you know what? I'll save it.
It's hard.
More heart than budget. And as Jack mentioned, $7,500 in 1934.
So here's what I love. I'm just, you know, when I go to the Wikipedia page for this, it's like they say budget $5,000 estimated, and then meanwhile in the other part it says that the film was shot on a minuscule budget of $7,500. I'm like, well, you can't even get that right.
No, even that.
But that's truly impressive. But that isn't a lot of money, but I don't know where to go with this. I have no idea. It seems like everybody was highly invested in overacting. So awesome. They made the movie that they wanted to make. Awesome. Nine.
Oh, wow. I disagree greatly, actually. Although I believe there is heart in this movie. However, I can't give it a high score just because I don't think there was a second take ever for anything.
I, to be honest with you, that kind of bumps my score up. I'm good with that.
No, nobody can. I mean, nobody behind the camera cared enough to go, you know what? We could dial that down a little bit. Because the overacting is universal through this film. It is not one actor. It is everybody. Everybody in this entire movie is set to 10.
I'm not entirely sure that they had invented second takes yet. I mean, it's 1934.
If anyone cared, if anyone cared, they would have, like, you know, held a rehearsal and dialed some of it in. So I can only go as high as, I was going to say seven, but no, six.
Held a rehearsal. That's funny. That's funny. I also got it. I'm going to split the difference on this and go seven. Because it's exploitive just for the sake of being exploitive, which is not in an era where it's starting that, which is not no heart. And yet they did try and make a real movie. They really did. I mean, they couldn't build sets, so they found places to shoot things. And you know, like that cat thing or the cat farm thing. That was a real thing that they found and that they decided to work into the script. Like
that's brilliant.
You know,
brilliant.
Yeah. Like it's, I wish I could describe to people, but
we're an audio podcast. I just have a quick question. When you say script, did you put air quotes around that?
Like I say, it was written by his wife. Oh, man. Yeah, so I'm going to go seven.
All right. I will split the difference as much as we possibly can and give it an eight. I do think family affair. And they probably, like, I assume all of the extras are just people they knew, like some of all of the folks, because it's 1934 as well. There's just not credits for people who have bit parts.
The guy who owned the cat place, the character's name was Goof, and nobody knows who he is. Like, there's no credit for him, and there's no record of who he is or
his
what.
His name was probably Goof, and he probably ran a cat farm.
Like, maybe nobody knows, and it's not the only character like that in the movie where nobody knows who actually played that character and their names.
So I'll give that an eight as well. It turns out in 1934 you wouldn't want your name on a porn film.
Lost to history.
Even if your name is Goof.
What the fuck moments.
All right. Yeah.
And don't just say the moment is 51 minutes long.
No. 55,
51,
whatever. It's fair. It's fair. There is so much, but I love the doctor. So they've gone to the morgue, which is one of those awesome Nosferatu morgues where it's like underground in a cave kind of thing. But, so they found a pretty girl who they are going to give life to again. And so just to make sure, the doctor pulls out a stethoscope to prove that she's dead. Which, I thought, good work, excellent.
Wait, what if this dead person's really alive? Yes. Let me check her heartbeat. Yeah. I never...
Oh, come on, you know the direction was, okay, do doctor stuff.
Do doctor stuff, yes, for sure.
What else could that guy have done?
There's a moment where I don't even remember, but like somebody says like, oh, the police are going to be here in minutes. And so then we carry on with the scene and the police never show up whatsoever. Like they called the police and the police are going to be here, but they never show up. And that's very typical of this. The cats, there's so many cats in this movie, but I love the fact that Goof, who bred cats, but why was he breeding cats? Because people love their cat fur. And I'm like, are you, is that, you're skinning the cats? Is that like, yes, like for their fur? Excellent. So.
No, no, you got to explain that further.
Oh, I was hoping I could explain it further.
Please go ahead.
You know the phrase, there's more than one way to skin a cat. So obviously this is good work. It's not repetitive.
This is a brand new way.
Yes.
Go into it further then. Do it now. Go ahead.
No, Stan, keep going. Stan's turn.
You keep going. Okay. His wife, when they introduce his wife, and I alluded to it before, like this is just out of nowhere, where it's just like, meanwhile, over here, you have Don's wife, who lives with her girlfriends, because it's 1934, and you wouldn't want to think that they actually live together. That would be bad, even though you have nudity before. And speaking of the nudity, the guy that he gives the shot of adrenaline to, and then runs off in a fit...
You're underselling the scene. If you bring it up, you have to explain it.
Oh, okay. Let me get the one out of the way first. So with the girls, and so she's in the bath, enjoying her bath that everybody else has gone through because it's 1934, and then she steps out of the bath, and I'm like, is she wearing slippers? She totally was wearing slippers as she got out of the bath.
I love that a lot.
Yeah.
Did you notice that as well, Jim?
No.
That's great.
Like black slippers. It's not even like,
oh my god,
like,
this movie's amazing.
You were just so attracted to her lovely 1934 lingerie that did such a good job of covering everything. But okay, so the adrenaline. So there's a mental patient that our new doctor has to try to treat. And so he's going to give him a shot. He doesn't want to give him the adrenaline. So he fills a syringe up with water. Because
he says water won't hurt him.
Won't hurt him.
And that so won't then, explode your red blood cells and kill you.
So, see, again, they should have gone to the internet for that information. But like, so he draws the water in, and then they fall on the ground, and it's just like, oh no. So he picks up the wrong one, of course, and then just stabs him at random. He doesn't even like make sure that there's no air bubbles in there. I mean, this guy's dead like six ways from Sunday, the way that this is going. But like, and he jams in the adrenaline, which
which makes him then an insane raving lunatic. And suddenly it's just like, his wife is like, oh no, he's worse now. And so
that is what adrenaline does. And adrenaline causes a person to become an enraged mate. The scene though, the acting, as he went from normal to enraged maniac, was spectacular.
It is.
You could tell this guy was a former. This guy that played that role was in a couple Charlie Chaplin movies and like 6 or 7 Fatty Arbuckle movies, silent movies. So you could tell like it was doing that silent movie overacting, and it was, but with sound now, it's so fantastic. It's so fantastic.
But and so then, of course, that's when you've got your the woman who was brought back from the dead, who's now kind of a zombie, who walks out and he's like, oh, you know, it's like, wow, pretty girl. And he grabs her and then, of course, races off with her and then strips her naked and, you know, rapes her and stuff like that, because 1934. And yeah, so that I'm going with a 10 on this one.
Yep. Congratulations. I now understand the movie less.
Excellent. Good. I have to, my work here and is done. I did
before you started trying to describe that scene. Yeah, my favorite was the cats. I mean, cats who eat the rats, and then you skin the cats and feed the carcass of the cats back to the rats. Kind of curious. I'm still hoping,
Jim, you still have to explain that, by the way. even though he just did. It's going to need more than one explanation.
Kind of hoping that he was also taking the rat skins, but I don't know how that works. And I'm pretty sure we should look at him for the Black Dahlia if it was his actual plan to make money this way, because that is one fucked up business plan. Shark Tank would probably not approve. Unfortunately, the most WTF thing about this movie is, in fact, the acting. I can't describe how over the top this is. Everything is at a freaking 10, which is amazing. I mean, and I also have to mention, they don't ever mention why the doctor has such power over his lab assistant. It is sort of implied that the lab assistant was taken in by the doctor after some horrific crime, but in no point is that explained. I mean, this guy probably had mental problems. I needed a little bit of more hint of a backstory on that, to, you know, sell his rapid descent into complete lunacy. The fact that the little cards explaining what's going on bore no resemblance to what was going on, despite
it was off spelling errors. Don't forget that.
No autocorrect. That's.
I mean, the intent is 100% clear on everything they're doing. However, the execution is so absolutely WTF. I can't believe it. Yeah. You know what? I would go with a 10, but just because it is in many ways just not good, I'm going to subtract 2. So 8. Still, like, strong WTF. Just, I think if they landed what they were trying to do, I would want to raise my score. And if I gave it a perfect 10, I couldn't do that. So 8.
So you're not giving it a perfect 10 because I'm failing to understand. It's like, you're not giving it a perfect 10.
I think it would have been crazier, and I would want to go up if they were better at what they were doing.
So you're not giving a perfect 10 because they were not good enough or too good at what they're doing? Is that what you're saying?
They were not good enough.
Which, shouldn't that make it a perfect 10?
Like, my score.
Don't try to understand his logic, please.
I just, okay. Oh man.
We'll make this a title movie card for the visual of his logic, okay?
Oh yeah. This movie's,
hey, my explanation made more sense than a stand. So
everything,
and it was under 40 minutes long. So
everything they do just doesn't make sense. It's just such an incredible, like, it's just, there's nothing like this. Like, we're underselling it. I can't help but think about how much we're underselling the craziness of this. And that's what's even more remarkable. Like, it's just, yeah. Oh man. Okay. The WTFs, where do we start? Like, at the very beginning, the movie starts with, like you say, that there's the doctor and then there's this, the assistant, and it's implied that he did something horrific and he took him in, blah, 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 blah. Nobody knows he's there. And he's working to help the assistant. And by the way, I'm thinking I should add a plus one to my More Heart Than Budget, because this movie had an actual heart in it.
you can modify your octagon score anytime before the end. So if you want
to, because this doctor has, I think that's how he's supposed to bring people back to life, is he wants to put that heart that he's developed, because it's like a living heart that's like in this glass thing that's like beating, sort of, but not. I think they think it's beating. I don't know, but it's yeah, this heart looking thing, and basically they go to get this corpse. And they steal this corpse, the beautiful woman, by him impersonating the coroner, the pavilion dude. He's supposed to impersonate the coroner. He does that by putting on a monocle and a mustache. Like, the most, like, that's what it takes to impersonate the coroner.
But that's what the coroner looked like.
Apparently, that's exactly what the coroner looked like, because everybody's saying that.
That was later. A lucky break.
Well, no, because they were in the police station later, yeah. And the coroner was there, and that's exactly what he looked like.
The coroner wasn't there. It was the other two dudes.
That was a freebie.
Because they're stealing this woman's body, just walking in there, and they apparently just walk out with it out the front door, where they had to convince people that he was the doctor to get in, but to just take the body out the front door. Anyways, so there's apparently, I guess there's another section down there, because there's these two other people with another body complaining about how heavy it is. And these two morticians.
It's like the loading dock of the morgue. You just,
yeah.
This is where you pick up. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're sitting there talking about how hot the girl is and implying that the coroner is going to, there's going to be a necrophilia section with her because she's so hot. And they have two different people. And for some reason, and those are the people also in the police station after, they give the most dialogue to the one who's the hardest to understand. Everything's this guy sounds like this. You can't really understand what I'm saying. And they give him a lot of dialogue. And you're sitting there going, I can understand the other guy. Let him talk. Reverse the roles, please. So now he has to go back after they get this woman, they reanimate her. I don't think they even like injected her with anything. From what I could tell, they just massaged her arms and that brought her back to life. And
man, was that the secret all along?
That's the secret. So then they bring her back to life, and then they're like, oh yeah, she'll be up and running in a couple days or whatever. So then he decides, that's when he says, go back and get another corpse for me. Because, and I don't care where you get it, if it's off the street, if it's whatever. And they say, well, there's that other mortician just up the street. Luckily, there's morticians everywhere around these people. So he goes to another mortician's place to get another body that looks exactly like the old ones. But he sneaks in through some sort of tunnel to get into this place, jumps out, and two cats that are, if you're watching the film, tied together by a string in order to make them fight, are fighting. They actually tied these cats together by a string to make them fight, if you didn't notice that. So these cats are fighting because they're tied. And for that reason, he gets so freaked that he jumps up and runs away and then says to them, I couldn't get it. Fucking cat guards. There's cat guards everywhere around there. I could not get it. I'm like, why are the cats keeping you? Why are fighting cats keeping you from? And by the way, for some reason, when he got up and out of the tunnel and he's running away, those same cats are now fighting on the street. What I'm trying to get to here is that's just like a 3-minute sequence. And the whole movie's like this. And I'm not going to go through the rest.
Please don't.
Because it's just, it's, No, because it's impossible. Like, it's just, the whole thing is like that. There is the part, you know, with the cat, where he gets angry at the cat for knocking over the jar with the heart in it. And then here's another thing. Is the maniac or the sex maniac the dude who was adrenalized or the doctor? Like, who's the... Because he kept on talking about how he needs to go get back the guy he hit with the adrenaline with, because he's going to recognize him when he comes out. Oh, yeah. And by the way, he left the body of the doctor that he killed that he's now impersonating. He just left him on the floor for a while until he's noticed by the wife of the dude he's put the adrenaline in. So then he explains that, it's my assistant. That's not me. That's my assistant. And, you know, I want to bring him back to life. And she goes, oh, well, then let's kill my husband. And what you'll do is then you'll bring him back to life. And because when you bring him back to life, you can control his brain, then I'll have control of my husband. I'm like, he never said that. All he said was he's bringing him back to life. Where did the control of my brain come from? Like, so anyways, the cat, he gets angry at this cat. So he chases this cat through. The cat gets thrown in the middle of the air. And then he runs after the cat in each scene, because that's how a cat is going to try and get away from you. It's by jumping 6 feet in the air for no reason. like the whole thing is just every nonsensical thing you can decide. I'm not even going to talk about what happens with the cat, because I got to leave something to Jim. And Jim, you have to talk about that scene, because that is WTF to a billion.
Putting him this in is the...
Jim, don't let him force you into anything. If you're uncomfortable, tell somebody immediately.
This is an easy 10.
Well, I'm glad that I had time to review the film. I've watched it all again.
Yeah, I know. It's like, we better not go through the movie, because honestly, if Jack explains the movie, then that each minute will take three of explanations.
This may be that movie we've been talking about. We have talked about what movie would we do if we did one of those 1 minute at a time podcasts.
Yeah.
And I think Maniac might be it. Because you could do a whole episode on those interstitials explain psychology circa 1934, probably a book that they found from like 1924. He gets mad at the cat. He pops the cat's eye out, which looks like,
wow,
it looks like a rabbit turd when he pops it out. Like, it's probably a cat that was missing an eye already.
It was a cat that was missing an eye. That's, yeah. I thought you would get this, because he's chasing a black cat.
Oh, okay.
And the cat that pops the eye out of is clearly a tabby cat.
Honest to God, you said the two cats were fighting earlier, and I could have sworn it was a cat and a bird. So,
how about the way he just throws the clearly just really did this, threw this cat when he's done with it after he pops the eye out, he throws it away, and they clearly really threw that black cat through some glass. Some glass jars and whatever.
Well, they obviously had a never-ending supply of cats, because they had a cat breeder on site. So,
I guess you can find the tabby cat without the eye. Clearly, this was before the Humane Society was monitoring
much before. And then he ate the eye. Like, yes. Let's. It's like you got the full eye trauma, and then he ate it. The cat breeder, that was unusual. Jack wanted me to come back to the cat breeder. So the entire business plan was the creation of a perpetual motion device in which he has the cats eat rats, and then he skins the cats, feeds their bodies to the rats, then he gets more rats, which can then be fed to the cats, creating a perpetual cycle. His idea being that rats breed faster than cats, so you will always have more rats to supply the cat food. What's weird is I couldn't, without sitting down and doing some math, I can't figure out why he's wrong. it actually does sound like that would work.
Well, my question is, do you think that was the real guy's, because that was a real cat farmer, we don't know who that dude is. Do you think that was the actual person in his actual business?
It could well be. The only thing I'll hit, because it's something that none of you will have seen, because as I mentioned, on Prime. God bless them for having a movie like this on Prime, because you're not going to find this on fucking Netflix. The sound is so bad I had to turn on the subtitles, but that meant that every time music started, there was a subtitle to describe the type of music that was playing.
Oh man, that's...
And the two that really stuck out were dark dramatic music. Dark dramatic music and joyless music.
Joyless music.
Which I thought was just awesome.
Which quite fits the movie.
That's right. Yeah, 10 for me as well, and minus none, because that's a silly thing to give a minus for. Memorable moments.
There's
a number.
there's one great point where like just for a line, like the doctor's raging at Don, his assistant, and he's like, "Once a ham, always a ham." Just like, wow, I don't even know. Like, this seems so out of context, because I know nothing about Don at this point other than he's a ham. But
well, how about when the chicks show up, you don't know who they are for 5 minutes.
Oh, well, absolutely.
All of a sudden, they're just talking, these women with no clothes on. Not that I've complained too much.
It definitely lacks, you know, a lot of the, you know, way movies should be made. But that's okay. And then also... I guess for me, like, the overacting is going to stick with me. The fact that it's, I think so much of it just ties into the fact that it's from 1934, and this has never been done before. So it's memorable in that I'm seeing this, you know, as many people did for the first time. So that's what's memorable. I'm not suggesting that there's things in it that are particularly memorable to that degree, but I'm going to go with a 7.
Nick? Memorable moments.
Memorable moments. I think the actual initial killing of the doctor, where it just comes out of nowhere, is going to stick for a bit. And actually, just the shock of, 1938 titties is really out there. And by the way, Jim, if you're up for, if you're going to go out to the, you know, mall and hang out and just start asking what's the oldest nipples you'd ever seen, I'm in. memorable. It's not going to be huge. I think I'm only going to give it a 6.
Yeah, I'm going to go even a little lower. I'm going to give it a 5, because everything is WTF. But I do think that again, the nudity and that scene with the girls, which is WTF, but clearly memorable, is something. But yes, it's when you do nothing good, memorable moments are supposed to be these things where you did something really good and you remember it. They didn't really do anything good, but I have a soft spot for the film, so a 5.
I think the weird psychology interstitials and that high class opening crawl are the thing. I think it's like how out of place they were with everything else that happened in the movie will stick with me, but still it's not super high for me. 6. And our final category is called Crazy Concept.
Well, I mean, nobody had ever done this before. Exploitation. He really kind of set the stage for a lot of crazy exploitation. We struggled to understand the concept and we've talked about it for 6.5 hours. So I think that that's a really good, strong, crazy concept. So I'm going to give it an 8.
Crazy concept. Yeah, you know what? I would give it an 8 as well. But unfortunately, Stan, you're pissing me off. So I'm just going to give it a 7.
Don't know what I did, but
that's completely logical.
That's sorry. Movie made nearly 100 years ago. I've got to judge you poorly based on Stan's attitude.
Yes, yeah. Unfortunately, that is more logical than a couple of the other things that he's given us. So, Jesus. I got a 10. Like, it's the concept of, it's all of it. It's the fact that you don't know what you're doing and yet you make a movie. and you make this movie, and it's not so much the context of the movie, it's the creation and the decision, the decisions behind the movie, and the decisions to go in this essentially, you created the exploitation genre as we know it in 1934. I would have thought it would have been created somewhere in the late 60s, the exploitation genre as we know it. So I think anything less than a 10 for this is, to me, is underselling it.
Yes, I agree with all of the things Jack just said. 10 for me as well. Jack, before I close it up, you had originally given a 7 for Heart. Are you modifying that?
I'm going to an 8 because it had an actual heart.
Actual heart, fair enough. All right, and each season we have 6 secret modifiers. One of these modifiers I want to explain. It is called the Will of the Gods. Because we are bringing in all of these different ideas, and one of these will become the next season, whatever the highest rated will become our next season. We are rolling an 8-sided die for each movie. If I roll an 8, it gets -1. Punished.
And you didn't do that in the last episode, but
I rolled it off air, and it got a 7, and this one also got a 7, so it's safe. It does get 2 of the other modifiers. It is probably as far under that 80-minute mark as we have done so far. Extra 1. It also, and Duane Esper, who not only is a director, he directed Marijuana and then went on to produce Freaks and a bunch of other classics of bees.
And How to Undress in Front of Your Husband, another movie he did.
Yes, yeah, so I need to track that one down. That'd be public domain as well, would it?
I'm sure it is.
It sounds spectacular.
Yes, it does.
All right, well, that gives it a final total of 83 out of 100, which I believe puts it in the top 10, tied with Frankenstein Island.
Oh. Ooh. Boys, beat that in the octagon.
That I hope we do, but it'll be that's a tough road to hoe right there.
Yep.
I'm beating something.
he's imagining those women who were born in the 1890s that just saw the boobs.
Oh boy, that's nothing beats those 130-year-olds.
Another question for the survey. What's the oldest woman you've pleasured yourself to? Yeah.
Before or after small this movie.
Survey questions.
I love that in the opening, that in the credits, I noticed that Phyllis Diller was in this movie, and I had a moment.
It's not the same Phyllis Diller. It's not the same Phyllis Diller.
It is not.
There was a woman. I don't know if it's Phyllis Diller. I think it's one of the other actors. The one who plays the neighbor that they talk to for just a moment, the neighbor lady, I think that woman is the grandmother of comedian Julie Brown.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Wow. I don't even know where to go from here. This show's off the rails, but that's really common for us. All right. Let's do some business, and then we'll tell folks what we're doing next.
All right. Well, we've been talking a lot about the Octagon. The Octagon is found on WeTalkPodcasts.com. You can keep track of – is our way to keep track of all the movies and your way to sort them by the total score or any of the 5 categories.
And links to listen to them.
And, yes, click on the name on the Octagon. It takes you right to the episode. And now that it's – now that we're at – what's it been? 250 episodes that we've done – I think you need that kind of reference.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, We Talk Podcasts has a Twitter and they have a Facebook. We are on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. And you should subscribe, rate, and review the podcast anywhere you see it. It really helps us out with getting the word out.
And I'm making a grilled cheese next. I don't know why you needed to know that. But
I can't believe you asked this quickly. For those of you who are unaware, Nick was eating animal crackers, JLA animal crackers that were expiring in a week right before he got on the air, and then complaining to us in between takes about about the effects. So we're not sure if it's from the recent movie just a few years ago or the 1970s JLA.
All right. Well, now that we've filled in everybody on that, let's season 11 Enter the Octagon moves on with some Jim Wynorski from Jim Gives Us Jim, and it's Transylvania Twist. So that should be we love our Jim Wynorski, so everybody looks forward to that. All right. I think this has already gone on too long. So for Jim and for Jack and for Nick, I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu, and thanks for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo!
I tell you, working on the dead, trying to bring back life. It's not natural. You with your weird idea. Haven't I stayed here and nursed Diane's dogs? Yeah. And even that miserable cat?
Agony! I can't stand this torture! Stealing through my body, creeping through my veins, pouring in my blood, darts of fire in my brain.